guys, welcome to Better Bachelor. This is Joker with a face for radio and a voice for print. Today we're going to talk about this story that came up in Forbes, but I'm going to take you down a different path. I know there's some other people that have mentioned the story, but it's about the CEO of Goldman Sachs saying that banks will not take companies public unless there's at least one diverse board member. Now, the diversity that they're specifically targeting is women, but I think they're also looking for other diversity. The problem with this is you can have equality, which is everybody gets to start from an equal place. But when you start trying to force equity, which means that everybody gets either additional or less help depending on their needs so that everybody finishes at the same time or gets to the same goal, that doesn't work in the world of business. Reason being is because if I can produce, say, 10 lamps in an hour and I get paid $10 an hour, and someone that can only produce 5 lamps an hour also gets $10 an hour. If they can do 5 lamps an hour and get $10 an hour, well, then I can say, well, I guess I only have to produce 5 lamps then to get my $10, and productivity stalls. So we're going to talk a little bit about equity and equality, but we're going to look more a little bit deeper into the statistics of men's work hours, women's work hours, and why there's a disparity both in the gap in salary, but more importantly, why men are more CEOs. Why do men become CEOs, and why do they become board members more often than women? It's not the usual women reasons. So let's go through this real quick. CEO of Goldman Sachs says the bank won't take companies public unless there's at least one diverse board member. Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon announced Thursday that the investment bank will only take companies public if they have at least one diverse board member with a focus on women. Solomon spoke to the benefits of having diverse perspectives on the Goldman Sachs board. 4 of the 11 board members are women, as well as what he sees in the industry overall. I look back to IPOs over the last 4 years, and the performance of IPOs where there's been a woman on the board in the U.S. is significantly better than the performance of IPOs where there hasn't been a woman on the board, Solomon said on CNBC's Squawk Box from the World Economic Forum's in Davos, Switzerland. Okay. Well, are those women on those boards there because they're extremely high performers and dedicated, hard employees, and they've driven themselves very hard with their work ethic to get on the board? Or are they there because they're women? I'm guessing it's probably the previous, and that they're very hard workers. But what happens when you just open a quota and says, well, you have to have one? That becomes very patronizing to women. It doesn't really benefit the hardworking individuals if they aren't women. Starting in the U.S. and Europe on July 1st, 2020, the bank won't take a company public unless there's at least one diverse candidate, and the plan is to increase the two board seats in 2021, Solomon said. He added that Goldman has the opportunity to use its network to help clients place women on boards, and that diversity is an important issue for corporate governance. Okay. Do you also help minorities? If not, why not? Why wouldn't you help minorities just the same? If a board is predominantly or solely women, do you help put men on those boards because diversity? If the answer is no, you're doing this wrong. Goldman isn't the only bank to focus on board diversity. State Street Global Advisors launched its Fearless Girl campaign in March 2017 to encourage more public companies to appoint women to board seats. The Fearless Girl statue moved from standing in front of the Charging Bull sculpture on Wall Street to opposite the New York Stock Exchange in December 2018. The continued focus may lead other banks to push for board diversity for ethical and economic reasons. Ethical. Why is it ethical to force someone to put a female on a board? If she's not the right candidate, if she's just there to fill a quota, that doesn't sound very ethical to me. They continue, this is an example of our saying, how can we do something that we think is right and helps move the market forward? Solomon said, quote, look, we might miss some business, but in the long run, this, I think, is the best advice for companies that want to drive premium returns for their shareholders over time. That doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense at all. We might lose some business, but it'll drive premium returns. That's backwards. So I wanted to look into this a little bit more and say, okay, why aren't there more women on boards and why aren't more women in higher positions? So I came over to the Harvard Business Review, and they say, why men work so many more hours? And this is by Joan Williams. So it's written by a woman, so it's not from a man's point of view. How many employed American mothers work more than 50 hours a week? Go on and guess. I've been asking lots of people the question lately. Most guess around 50%. The truth is 9%. 9% of working moms clock more than 50 hours a week during the key years of career advancement, age 25 to 44. If we limit the sample to mothers with at least a college degree, the number rises only slightly to 13.9%. These statistics came from the special tabulations of data from the U.S. Census Bureau in 2011. So here they have a graphic here that I've opened up in another page, and I'll zoom in a bit for you guys. It says, working parent hours gap. Men who are fathers log longer hours at the office, but mothers work fewer hours than childless women. So those aged 25 to 44 who work more than 50 hours a week. Fathers who live with their children, 30% of men. Men who have no children, 20% of men. Mothers who live with their children, 9%. So the men are almost, they're like 3.5 times more than, fathers are 3.5 times more than work, 3.5 times more hours overtime, or more than 50% per week than the mothers do. So 9% versus 29%. Women who have no children, 14% work more than 50 hours a week. Men, 21. So a third more men there. So we can see that men are very willing to put in more hours in the what they call the child-rearing years of 25 to 44. What about all men in general? All men in general. Those who work more than 50 hours a week, if they have a less than high school diploma, 17% of men, 5% of mothers, fathers versus mothers. 24% men with a high school education, 6% of women. So that's, again, four times more. And then again, some college, 30% of men versus 7% of mothers, or 30% of fathers, 7% of mothers, and college degree or higher, 37% of men, 14% of women. That's your CEO area right there. That's your board member, college degree or higher. So almost 40% of men versus 14 or 15% women. Again, 2.5 times more men will work overtime if they have a college degree or higher than women do. So that's going to be very telling when it comes to why are men getting so many more senior positions. It's because they're willing to put in a lot more time. They continue on. This long hours problem, analyzed so insightfully by Robin Eli and Irene Padovic, is key reason why the percentage of women in top jobs have stalled out at about 14%, a number that has barely budged in the past decade. We can't expect progress when the fast track that leads to top jobs requires time commitment that excludes most mothers, and by extension, most women. A recent study by Joni Hirsch of Vanderbilt Law School found that the mothers most likely to enter the fast track, graduates of elite universities, are less likely to be working full-time than mothers with less prestigious degrees. Only 45.3% of mothers who graduated from top-tier institutions and only 34.8% of MBAs have full-time jobs. So only 45% have full-time jobs, and only 38% of MBAs have full-time jobs. That's less than half the women with these high degrees. So immediately, 50% are not even working full-time. They're may be working part-time. They may be being mothers because they're, you know, 45.3% of mothers. So there's 50% of your upper echelon of women for these board member and CEO positions just not there. Most aren't full-time homemakers. In addition to parenting, they typically have part-time jobs or community service roles. But you can bet your boots it's undervalued work that rarely, if ever, leads to positions of power. Despite the obvious importance of the hours problem, progress has been limited. An increasingly common response is to declare victory. What flexibility means today is not part-time, the head of work life at one large organization told me recently. What people want is the ability to work any time, anywhere. And yeah, that's fine. Of course, we'd all like to work anytime, anywhere. But if you're a CEO, or if you're in a senior position at a law firm, or in medicine, or in business, or in any of these jobs that traditionally lead to CEO or board member or senior positions, you're in the office and you're working very, very long hours. So it's not that women can't put in the effort. It's not that they don't put in the effort if they want these positions. It's just there are very, very few of them in comparison to men overall that put in the required hours to get these senior positions. We can't get mothers to work more hours. We've tried and failed for 40 years. Mothers won't bite for a simple reason. If they work a 55-hour week, they will have to leave home at, say, 8:30 and return at 8:30 every day for the work week, assuming an average commute time. Most moms have this one little hang-up. They want to see their children awake. Increasingly, many fathers do too. And yet, after 40 years of intensive effort, the work-life frontiers look grim. Recent events confirm this. In late 2012, Bank of America announced that it was preparing to add more restrictions to its work-at-home program, reportedly to increase efficiency. Earlier this year, Best Buy CEO Hubert Jolly ended the company's results-only work environment program that judged corporate employees only on performance. So again, if you can't work at home and you have to go into an office for extremely long hours, mothers specifically do not want to put in those hours. But they did show that single women are a third of what single men will put in working those extra hours. Men get satisfaction and they get a sense of accomplishment from working the long hours and being busy that women don't. You can't change human nature. Why are workplace flexibility programs so hard to sustain? The business case for such programs' benefits is well known. The elimination of Roe is particularly striking because the path-breaking work of Aaron Kelly, Phyllis Moen, and their colleagues has produced rigorous regressions that Roe reduced turnover and turnover intentions, reduced employees' interruptions at work, reduced time employees engaged in work of little value to the company, and increased employees' sense of job involvement using rigorous social science methodology. So they're saying that there is something to be said for working at home and working on your own time frame so long as the work itself got done. But again, these top positions require you to be present in an office and communicating and learning and teaching those around you. But the issue here is not money, they continue. Manliness and morality. For upper middle class men, notes Scientologist Michel Lamont, ambition and strong work ethic are doubly sacred as signals of both moral and socioeconomic purity. Elite men's jobs revolve around the work devotion schema, which communicates that high-level professionals should demonstrate commitment by making work the central focus of their lives and manifest singular devotion to work unencumbered with family responsibilities, to quote sociologist Mary Blay Loy. This idea has roots in 17th century Protestant work ethic, in which work was viewed as a calling to serve God and society. The religious connection has vanished, or has it? Work devotion marries moral purity with elite status. Way back when I was visiting professor at Harvard Law School, I used to call it the cult of busy smartness. How do the elites signal to each other how important they are? I am slammed as a socially acceptable way of saying I am important. 50 years ago, Americans signaled class by displaying their leisure. Think bankers' hours 93. Today, the elite journalist Christina Freeland calls them the working rich, display their extreme schedules. Whew, boy, they're all over the place in this writing. So, you know, again, it's how does a man show his worth? How does it show his value? How does a man feel accomplished in life? It's by a large bank account. It's by making a good sum of money. And again, this may be historically the case, maybe not currently, but it is still to some degree. And men get a better family life and they get a better spouse. I don't know if you'd say perhaps a prettier or younger, whatever it is they're looking for, because they are more successful. We know this. Number one, so they get more money. Number two, they get prestige. They get that title. I am vice president of, or I am director of. That is important to men. And number three is they get a sense of accomplishment out of it. They feel that they are important, and they feel that they have value to the community when they are working like this. Women do not get the same sense of accomplishment. And again, it's not me saying this. There's article after article that states this. Not only is work devotion a class act, a way of enacting class status, it's also a certain way of being a real man. Working long hours is seen as heroic activity, noted Cynthia Fuse Epstein and her co-authors in their 1999 study of lawyers. Maureen Cooper's study of engineers in Silicon Valley closely observes how working long hours turns pencil pushing or computer keyboarding into a manly test of physical endurance. There's a kind of machismo culture that you don't sleep, one father told her. Successful enactment of this masculinity, Cooper concludes, involves displaying one's exhaustion physically and verbally in order to convey the depths of one's commitment, stamina, and virility. In Japan, it's often considered a good sign if a worker falls asleep at their desk. Why? Because it's supposed, now not for extremely long periods of time, but if they doze off at their desk and they're in before their boss and they leave after their boss, it shows them so wholly dedicated to work that and they're so consumed by it that they literally cannot keep their eyes open. They're working so hard. It's a thing in Japan. I don't know why. They have sleep pods. That's where they originally started in Japan. So workmen, traditionally men, could work long hours, go take a nap in their pod, then come back and work exceptionally long hours. I've heard of men working as many as 18 hours a day. It's a sense of pride. And for women, they just do not get the same sense of accomplishment out of it. Many think it's a punishment. And again, not my words. They continue on. Workplace norms cement felt truths that link long hours with manliness, moral structure, and elite status. If work family advocates think they can dislodge these truths with documentation of business benefits, they are sorely mistaken. The coverage of Marissa Mayer's decision to eliminate telecommuting highlights how even hard data gets lost in the shuffle. So they're continuing to say that, you know, you can be plenty productive at home, but in many cases, they're ending these programs. When I worked for a networking company in Raleigh, North Carolina, it was a Fortune 500 company. When I was initially hired, we were told we could work 4 days a work week from home. Only had to be in the office on Mondays so we could have meetings and discuss and kind of that thing. And for me, that was perfect because I lived almost an hour away. And as time went on, some people weren't performing as well. And instead of punishing just those people, they made everybody start coming into the office 3 days a week. Then it was 2 days a week. Then you could get Fridays to work from home. Then it was every other Friday work from home. And then eventually they got rid of it. And that's when I left my job because I was commuting to work an hour on the way there before rush hour and an hour on the way home after rush hour. So my days were driving to work at 7 a.m. and I was leaving work at 6 or 7 p.m. and it was just too much for me to handle. So they're stating it's kind of the same thing. They think that women could be more productive and could be more willing to work these longer hours if they worked from home, but it's not catching on. So here's where we stand. If institutions are serious about advancing women, they'll have to address the hours problem. That's the only way to get a critical mass of women poised for leadership, but we'll never address the hours problem until we open up a conversation about what drives it. It's not productivity, it's not innovation, it's identity. If you've lived a life where holidays are a nuisance, where you've missed your favorite uncle's funeral and your children's childhoods, in a culture that conflates manly heroism with long hours, it's going to take more than a few regressions to convince you it wasn't really necessary, after all, for your work to devour you. And you know, you can't stop guys from wanting to work hard. You can't stop. So you can say, hey, it's a 40-hour work week here. You don't have to work any more than that. I know. I've done this myself. I'll say, okay, and I'll get a project, and I'll work on it. And if I don't have anything else to do, I'm sitting around the house watching a movie or something, and I'm bored, I'll load up work and I'll keep working because I've got nothing else to do. And if I'm doing something I enjoy, I find it intriguing. So what happens, and this did legitimately happen to me, which is why I got two promotions in a matter of span of 3.5 years, is because I'd get bored and I'd work and my project would be done. And instead of a 40 hour or say a full week of it getting done, I'd knock it out in 2.5 days. And then I'd be at work and I'd say, is there something you need me to do? Here's my project. And they thought, you know, that I was a smart, fast worker. The truth is, I just got bored and I didn't feel like doing anything else, so I did work. You can't stop people from doing that. So if you want to be a highly successful person, those are the kind of things that you have to do. You can't tame everybody else down so that women can keep up. That's not how it's going to work. You can't put rules on this kind of thing unless you literally make people leave their work laptops at the office and they can't do work. But no company is going to do that because they want to get the most work out of their employees for the price that they're paying them. And so it only makes good business sense to have everybody striving and everybody trying to work that extra time, because most of the time it's salary. They're trying to prove themselves so they can get that promotion, so they can get that next bump. And men will do that, and women just will not, to the same fashion as here that they've stated the statistics state that. So there's really no way, unless you literally force people not to work, that you're going to hold men back. They're just going to keep climbing and growing. So when you go back to the, you know, when we go back to the original Goldman Sachs story here, and they're talking about forcing a woman to be on the board, the problem is she may not want to keep up with the work hours that many of these board members are willing to put in. Now, it depends on the company. Maybe there's some board members that have very cushy jobs, but from my understanding, board members and CEOs, most of them put in very long hours. And it's not necessarily that the work that they do is difficult compared to an employee, but the hours that they work and the decisions they have to make are very stressful and very long hours. And many women simply burn out. And it's not because they can't handle it, it's because they don't want to handle it. Men derive pleasure from it, where women traditionally, and most women, not all, tend to find more pleasure in spending time with family, their children, perhaps their loved ones at home. So I don't know how they're going to settle this up, but I don't think they're going to have very good results with forcing a person that doesn't want to be on a board or isn't willing to put in the hours onto the board, because that person's going to either feel out of place, going to feel stressed, or the board is going to not look at that person as an equal simply because they didn't put in the time and the effort to get there. Guys, if you like my work, links are below. Thank you to all of those who have supported me. And the best thing you can do is to help me and support my channel is to hit that like, comment, and of course, subscribe. Only about 65% of you are subscribed. So please subscribe so you can get more of my episodes when they are available. Financially, I've got my PayPal, my Bitcoin, and of course, I've got Subscribestar and Patreon links below if you'd like to join me over there. I will be putting together a special episode. As for now, I only have a couple followers, but I'll put a special episode together for anybody that follows me on either Patreon or Subscribestar, and maybe do a live session there once a month for you. Guys, I'll leave it there. This is Better Bachelor. I am Joker, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.